This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
It's important we remember what the stakes are of the game. We'll take a look at Virginia tonight. We're going to take a look at polling numbers. Did Trump actually pivot in Minnesota? Speaking of which, Nick Shirley is here. All that and more coming up on I'm Right. You know, I have this thing where I go back and forth on something, on how I feel. You probably have that with several things in your life, but you know what? You want to know what does that to me? It's Republicans, anybody on the right, doesn't have to be a Republican, anyone on the right who still makes some attempt at extending a hand to the left with the expectation the left will extend a hand back. And here are the two emotions I go through. Sometimes when I see anybody do that, I get angry with them. What are you, stupid? They hate you. They want to kill you. What are you, stupid? Sometimes I have anger. And then there are other times where I look at them almost like a child, a child who still believes in the tooth fairy. Maybe a little too late, right? 15-year-old. Still believes in the tooth fairy, where you look at them and you think, oh, that's kind of precious. It's really naive, but it's kind of precious at the same time. I'm sorry, but your father's Democrat Party is gone. It's gone. I know they still carry the name Democrat, I know. But I don't know. I was a JFK Democrat. I was a Bill Clinton Democrat. I understand they still carry the name. That party is gone. The Democrat Party of today bears no resemblance at all to what it used to be, or what your dad voted for, or maybe what you want it to be. And every time we turn around, the Democrats are the ones showing us that. It's not like I need you to sit here and tune into I'm Right every night on the first, although we're grateful you do, and take my word for it. Every time they talk, every time they take power, they tell you who they are. It's time to stop believing in the tooth fairy. I think a wonderful example of this, and in a way, I'm almost happy Democrats won in Virginia, because it's a wonderful example of this. Don't get me wrong, I would rather that people who live in Virginia don't have to suffer, but Democrats took power in Virginia. Virginia is not Connecticut. It's not California. You can argue, I could argue all day long, it's blue, it's purple, it's trending red, but we could argue, but there is an argument to be had. They did just have a Republican governor, so it's not totally gone. Democrats just took power. You know what they're doing? Highest taxes in the country. Boop, immediately. Gone. The governing as if it's Connecticut. They've moved to eliminate Republican seats. They have moved to eliminate mandatory minimum sentences for rapists and child predators. Let me repeat that one more time before I go on. Democrats took power in a, we'll call it a purple state, and one of their first orders of business was to get rid or try to get rid of mandatory minimum sentences for people who rape children. Your dad's Democrat Party is gone. Gone. Whatever it was, this is the party of demons now. They're pushing to do state-enforced homosexuality in schools. Can't have Aiden, Jaden, and Braden growing up to be straight with wives and children, after all. The Virginia Senate right now attempting to make gun ownership illegal. Let me stress again, this is not California. This is a purple state that just had a Republican governor. They're pushing bills that will ban immigration laws from being enforced within 40 feet of a polling place. Huh. Well, that's interesting. What opportunity would there be for people who enforce immigration laws to enforce them at a polling place, are you relying on foreigners to vote Democrats? Well, of course, the answer is yes. This is what they did in a purple state when they took back power. This is not like an abnormality at all at the highest levels of the Democrat Party, whether it's J.B. Pritzker, Gavin Newsom, Chuck Schumer, Hakeem Jeffries. We're not talking the AOCs of the world anymore. The power brokers in the Democrat Party are pushing the most insane demonic things. Did you think just because Donald Trump won in November, these people were going to go back to the drawing board and say to themselves, I don't know, we're kind of too insane. Maybe we've gone too demonic. These people don't think that way, because as I've explained to you so many times before, you're not dealing with bad, you're dealing with evil. And the difference is, a bank robber is bad, and he may wake up one day, maybe in prison, maybe otherwise, and say to himself, you know, I want to change my life. It's bad to go steal from other people. I'm going to change my life. Bad can change. The devil never does. Demons never do. They don't ever wake up one day and say, ever. They don't ever wake up and say, you know, we probably took that a little too far. Gosh, I feel terrible about what we've done. This is evil now. And that's what we have to tackle. Just accept this. If nothing else, accept this. People who come into any country illegally should be deported. It's a basic line. It's a basic truth. And that's not an American line. It's not for modern day. All throughout the history of mankind, that's just, choose your language, but you could walk into any society and say that to virtually anybody, and they'd say, Well, yeah, you can't just allow people to come in illegally. Someone has to go and find them and arrest them and deport them. Yeah. This is how Democrats talk about ICE.
I am in support of abolishing ICE.
Well, they shouldn't have more money at all. In fact, agency shouldn't continue as it is.
So this agency must be abolished.
ICE needs to be abolished. It cannot be reformed. And Christian Noah must be impeached. And as the...
I intend to introduce a bill to abolish ICE. We need to make ICE go away.
Right out in the open. We're not talking about some leaked text messages here between Democrat politicians. One of the two major political parties in the United States of America now has a stated platform that the deportation agency of the country should be abolished because they're getting rid of people who are here illegally. What do you want me to say? 15 minutes ago, Eric Holder, Barack Obama's attorney general, was on camera saying their plans for the Supreme Court.
It pains me to say this. I think the Supreme Court is a broken institution. And it's something that has to be, I think, a part of the national conversation in 26 and in 28. What are we going to do about the Supreme Court? And I think that we have to think about, again, talking about the acquisition and the use of power. If there is a Democratic trifecta in 2028, and I think the possibility of that is pretty good, Supreme Court reform is something that has to be considered. Term limits, I think, at a minimum, potentially expanding the court is something I think that also should be considered.
The acquisition and the use of power. These people did not go back to the drawing board after November a year ago and say to themselves, we've gone too far, we should back off, maybe we're too evil now, that was wrong. They went to the drawing board after a loss in November, and you know what they told themselves? We didn't go near far enough. We didn't punish our enemies near enough. We didn't use our power near as much as we should have used our power. They didn't go to the drawing board and say, you know what, arresting Donald Trump and all those January 6ers, pro-lifers, school board moms, maybe that was too far. Oh my gosh, that's not what they think at all. Here's Jamie Raskin and Hakeem Jeffries.
If and when we come back to power, and we will, we are not going to look kindly upon people who facilitated, to use a word of the day, who facilitated authoritarianism in our country. Because that's an assault on our Constitution and on our people.
One thing to understand as people who are flirting with the Trump administration or doing the bidding of the Trump administration or engaging in the pay-to-play schemes of the Trump administration. The statute of limitations is 5 years. Donald Trump and this toxic administration will be long gone, but there will still be accountability to be had. And that process, of course, begins now, but it will not be complete until perhaps there is an independent Department of Justice, certainly an independent House of Representatives, in Democratic hands.
Department of Justice. I wonder if these people take power again in 2028, I wonder what they're going to do with that Department of Justice.
Trump and all of the bottom-feeding morons surrounding him, and Elon Musk and all the bottom-feeding clinger-honors that surround him, I think they commit crimes every day. And I think to reconcile all of this is going to take hardcore, not integrity Democrats. F*** you, Democrats. F*** you for f***ing over our country. We are serious about this. We are prosecuting. We're going to uncover every document, every phone call, everything you did. We will be relentless about it.
The Nazis ultimately lost. Nazi ideology was outlawed through denazification. One day we will see the demagification of this country. It will come. And you know what else happened? Leaders of the Nazi regime were prosecuted and tried as war criminals.
I want Stephen Miller to be the number one in the Nuremberg trials when this is done. When this is done, I want Stephen Miller to be the first one who is tried and convicted and dangles.
Remember what I said? In October, do you remember what I said to Republicans who, let's turn down the temperature? There's no turning down the temperature because you don't have the ability to do so, and neither do I. Nobody on the right can turn down the temperature. The temperature can only be turned down from the left. And let's be frank about this. Let's just be frank about this. They watched an ambush of Steve Scalise and others, and they didn't turn down the temperature. They watched Donald Trump get shot in the ear and another man get his head blown off that day, and they didn't turn down the temperature. Another assassin tried to kill Donald Trump, and they didn't turn down the temperature. Charlie Kirk died out in the open, on video, for everyone to see, and they didn't turn down the temperature. They're not going to turn down the temperature. They're going to turn it up. I look at these people on the right. Oh, we should extend a hand. I love them. Well, let's have unity. And it's honest, it's like a child who still believes in the tooth fairy. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We have a huge show for you tonight. Something else that's huge. Inflation. It sucks. It's not going back. You know that by now. You're not a child. You're not that child who believes in the tooth fairy. You understand that prices are not going back down. I'm happy they're not still going up, but they're not going back down. So how do you save money? Well, I'll give you an easy one. Switch to Pure Talk. I had T-Mobile. We have four lines in our house, me, two boys. I had T-Mobile. When we switched to Pure Talk, our bill got cut in half. I thought something was wrong the first time I got a phone bill. I thought, what? That can't be right. They undercharged us. No. You want to save a bunch of money? You're not sacrificing service? You want to patronize the patriotic cell phone company? PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Okay. So sometimes I understand I may fire you up and sometimes I may try to calm you down, but it's really important that we don't chase the news of the day like we're a cat with a laser on the wall. What's happening in Minnesota? What did Donald Trump do or what did he not do in Minnesota? If you spend all your time on social media, then you will see a mix of two things all day today. Donald Trump caved. He's worthless. He's useless. Donald Trump went all in. He stood up. The communists are on the run. But what actually happened? Joining me now, you know him well, my friend Sean Spicer has a new book out. He does the Sean Spicer show. I mean, everybody knows Sean. And he wrote the book about this kind of thing. Sean, Greg Bovino, Kristi Noem sounds like maybe she got a little whipping behind closed doors. What did or didn't happen? What's happening and why?
Look, there's a lot of things, and that's why, frankly, I wrote that book, because there's a big difference between Trump 2.0 and Trump 1.0. And Trump 1.0, they would have seen a problem, and everybody would have said, get that person out. Look, the president's not happy. It's pretty obvious with what the response was to what happened in Minneapolis. I don't think anybody was. The people on the right were pissed about how they answered the concealed carry issue, which, frankly, people like me, and I think you, probably have been championing Second Amendment rights for decades. To see them say you don't have a right to carry a weapon, are you kidding me? There's a big difference. That you don't have a right to put your hands on a law enforcement officer doing their job. That's something we can probably all agree on. But I think the way DHS responded to this, the president recognized that he needed somebody of Tom Homan's stature. Look, Tom Homan's been a law enforcement guy, an ICE guy, a CBP guy, and a New York beat cop for over three decades. He's got credibility. As Caroline Leavitt pointed out in the briefing room the other day, the guy was awarded our nation's highest civilian honor by President Obama. So the president, I think, recognized that this didn't look good, that he was pursuing the right policies, that he was elected on those policies, but the confusion and chaos that is being depicted on our screens didn't look good. And he wanted to instill a sense of getting the job done. And so he sent out Homan. And I think that was the right thing. Bovino, look, I was on a call this morning, Jesse, with Trisha McLaughlin and Caroline Leavitt. There's no question in their minds, you know, Mr. Bovino, Commander Bovino, is still on the job. But I don't think it's any secret in Washington. There were two camps. There was the Homan camp, and then there was the Kristi Noem camp. And so when Bovino went out of Minneapolis, I think it was pretty obvious that he was associated with Noem. He was Noem's person in Minneapolis. Homan doesn't need somebody else there getting in his way. And so he wanted Noem's person, which is Greg Bovino, out of the way.
Okay, so for those of us who are not super insiders like you, I didn't have a phone call with the press sec today. What is the difference in the two camps, the Noem camp and the Homan camp? The Noem camp just lost. The Homan camp is winning. What's the difference?
Well, just to back up a second, one of the things that I did is I never changed the passwords when I left as press secretaries. So and all these people need to call me now. So Caroline will call me and be like, hey, how do I get into this app? And I'm like, oh, now that I got you on the phone. I'm kidding. Look, the difference is, Homan is a beat cop at heart. He is a federal agent at heart. Kristi Noem was a governor, and I think she obviously has managerial skills running a state, but there's a big difference when you're talking about an ICE operation, what rules you abide by, the rules of engagement, the rules in a city cooperating and working with local and state police, detaining people, arresting people. Homan knows that inside and out. And I think that Kristi Noem, I mean, look, here's the interesting thing that I think is fascinating. If you listen to the mainstream media, you would think that Commander Bovino is the head of CBP. He's not. He's a law enforcement agent there. Rodney Scott is the civilian Senate confirmed head of CBP. You don't see him out there, do you? Because he is more aligned with Tom Homan. And so there's these camps that have emerged mostly on sort of how on style. So Noem has her way, Bovino associated with Noem. Rodney Scott is sort of apparently close with Homan. And you saw this divide. I don't think it's that surprising. And I know the media likes to make a big deal out of it, but these nuances exist all over, you know, in the workplace, in the military, where you've got people who are, you know, team A or team B. But at the end of the day, right now, the president needed to have a degree of credibility going into Minneapolis to negotiate with Tim Walz, with Mayor Fry, to get this thing back on track, to focus on what the real objective was, which is to get bad people out of this country, especially criminals.
Now, I guess I'll just lay it out there like this, Sean, right between the eyes, because that's kind of what I do. I remember Trump 1.0. Trump 1.0, he did get his lunch eaten a bit by the George Floyd communist protests. He got his lunch eaten certainly by COVID. He has gotten better, which is why there's Trump 2.0, which of course you wrote the book on that. I am nervous. I'm not criticizing yet, but I will. I'm nervous from the sidelines that Trump 2.0 is getting his lunch eaten by communist op number three. Tell me why I shouldn't be nervous.
What's because the response, So I was in Trump 1.0. And again, I don't mean to sound like a, but that's kind of what I, as somebody who was there, I want people to understand the difference between Trump 1.0, the people, the policy, the processes, and Trump 2.0 and why it's different. And the president wrote the foreword to my book, which is because, again, I think he gets this. And the difference is, Jesse, unequivocally, look at the response. All this plays out over the weekend. Caroline Levitt comes marching out to the press briefing room on Monday and lays it out on the line. Yep, you have a right to carry a weapon. This is what's happening. Here's how we're going to deal with this. These are the demands that we have of Governor Walz and Mayor Fry to get this thing back on track. It was textbook, perfect, pitch perfect crisis response. The way they handle this, yes, it got messy over the weekend in terms of what DHS initially put out and some of the concerns that people on the right had with the response, not just the people on the left. And how the White House responded is not how we handled the response in Trump 1.0. I was there. I handled the messaging on Comey's firing. It did not go well. In fact, the president was furious, rightly so, about how that went down. But the difference between how we handled it in Trump 1.0 and how Caroline Levitt and her team handled the crisis response to this latest situation was pitch perfect. That's a big difference. He has the right people around him that work in unison to get the message out, to get it straight. They auto-corrected quicker than I've ever seen. I mean, I get everyone wants to sweep this under the rug, but sometimes you have to stop, pause, and do the analysis to find out what worked, what didn't. What they did this time was the perfect response. And the American people are going to reward them for that. They know sometimes people make mistakes. Do you own your mistakes? Do you get things straightened out, move right, move on, you know, get it going? And I think they did that. Homan's going to be a great asset to them. He's got the credibility to do this. And I think this is where the Democrats need to be careful, because if they overplay their hand again, this will come right back on the Republicans.
Somebody around him, probably villain number one for people on the right in the Trump administration, is Pam Bondi. I've certainly ripped on her plenty myself, but my opinion of her is not important. Donald Trump's is. We've heard enough. He's even said stuff on social media that says he may not be 100% pleased. How pleased is he, or displeased?
With Pam?
Yes.
So here's the interesting thing about this. I've read the posts. I've heard some of the rumors. But President Trump's relationship with Pam Bondi, in fact, the absolute first time I ever met him, was way back when at a fundraiser in Boca Raton, and Pam Bondi had been the AG at that time, and he came. I had never met her before either, and the president just was extolling her virtues and praising her and talking about Pam Bondi this and Pam Bondi that. His relationship with her goes way back. And again, this is another big contrast between Trump 1.0 and Trump 2.0. It's these aren't just people that were, you know, recommended to him as they were when I joined, that he had never met before, that he didn't have a relationship with before. He might get a little pissy with Pam here and there, or get upset, blow off some steam, but the relationship that he has with her goes back decades. And I think that, if you know, so like any relationship, there's ups and downs, but at the end of the day, this is a tried and true relationship that he has with her.
Sean, tell me about Trump 2.0, the book. He wrote the foreword for it. Not that bad when you get the most powerful man on the planet to write the friggin' foreword for your book. Not that I'm jealous or anything.
So I would sit back and often get asked, what's the difference when you serve from now? And I would make notes, and I jot, and I talk a lot about it on my show every night in different and subtle ways intermittently. And I literally was having a conversation with someone just springtime a year, you know, April, May. And I said, you know, it is so different. Like, the people are different. Like, that we just talked about why Pam Bondi is different than Jeff Sessions, right? Or Bill Barr, the first term attorney general, or why Pete Hegseth is very different than General Mattis. The people are unbelievably different, and not just the obvious ways. And so I went into depth on this. The agenda is very different. Why is he supporting or promoting stuff like MAHA? And he, you know, not starting with random things like healthcare that we tried to do in the first term and without any real direction or plan. The 4 years out of office, this is the key thing that everyone has to understand. Every president except for one, and the second being Trump now, and the first time in modern history, have been sequential when you have two terms, back to back. January 20th becomes January 21st. Whoever your chief of staff was continues. Whatever you were working on Monday continues on Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday into your second term. Because Trump had 4 years out of office, he was able to plot and plan how things would be different in a second term. And I went through and I fully analyzed all of this. Why is the agenda different? Why are they more successful? Why do they have a better idea? And it's because of this planning, this plotting, these outside groups, America First Policy Institute, Renewing America, which was Newt Gingrich's thing, Project 2025. All of these things that people just took for granted and watched by actually made a real difference in what will make this probably the most consequential second term of any president in history.
Trump 2.0 is the book. Sean, as always, my brother, I appreciate you very much. All right. That story in Minnesota, it broke. Nick Shirley broke it. Let's see if he has anything to say about it. Before we get to Nick, let me talk to you about me. It's my favorite subject. Stop. You understand what I'm saying? Your gut health. It gets worse as you get older. Doesn't it? Don't you eat things now that don't agree with you? Oh, kind of feel bloated. Heartburn. You know, you want to hear something terrible? One of my favorite things in the world is orange juice. Orange juice used to give me heartburn. I say used to because cowboy colostrum has changed all that. I don't ever feel bloated like that. I don't remember the last time I've had heartburn. I have cowboy colostrum in my coffee every day. I have the chocolate kind. They have vanilla and strawberry. It's delicious. You'd never know there were health benefits to it, but it's not only delicious, my gut works good. Like I'm 20 years old again. Try it. Cowboycolostrum.com. Use the code JesseTV. We'll be back.
Hello, we'd like to ask where the money's going. What do you guys think about the fraud that's taking place here in Minnesota?
I don't think anybody is enabling fraud to happen.
We need to hold Governor Walz accountable for this.
What was this money spent on? $1.26 million. What was that money spent on?
Ask about
it. There aren't any kids.
Answer the question. Are there children? There's no children inside this building.
Potentially the largest fraud scandal in U.S. history is taking place in Minnesota as literally billions of dollars have been funneled through Somali-ran fraudulent businesses. So much fraud, it could actually almost replace the entire GDP of Somalia. These fraudsters have worked hand-in-hand with the Minnesota government as they enabled billions of dollars to be given to fraudulent businesses underneath welfare purposes. Some of this money eventually landed in the hands of terrorist groups in Somalia like the Al-Shabaab, and others enriched themselves all at the U.S. taxpayers' expense.
It's wild how big that was, and now they want us to move on. Joining me now, the man responsible for it, Nick Shirley. You can check out his YouTube channel. I'd recommend subscribing, youtube.com/@Nick Shirley. Nick, 141 million people watched that thing on YouTube. It was the story in the United States of America, and I can't help but feel like a lot of this anarchy in Minnesota right now is an attempt to get us off of that.
Yeah, I believe so too. So, I mean, 141 million people on X saw that video, and then you go all across other platforms, and that the reach that video did was probably more close to quite literally a billion views altogether as far as the exposure that clips of that video received across the internet. So now you're seeing in Minnesota that they're trying to kind of divert from the fraud. They're not really talking about the fraud. Tim Walz and Ilhan Omar. Ilhan Omar, in fact, has not said a word about the fraud at all. She has not even addressed the fraud. And so what you're seeing right now is a lot of deflection and them trying to divert the attention from the fraud into these protests and to try to paint that ICE is bad man. Meanwhile, fraudsters are getting away.
Nick, can you rewind for us? Because there are a lot of people, motivated young people out there who want to dig into this stuff. How did it begin? Where did you get the idea for this? How'd you do this?
Yeah, so for the past over 100 weeks, I've been making a YouTube video about something happening here inside the United States or in other parts of the world. So for me, it was just, I had listened to the people that watch my videos, and they had told me about this fraud that has been taking place, and I went and acted on it. And at that time, the man David, who's on the screen right now, David reached out to me with all the information as far as the exact numbers that he had received from people inside the Capitol. And he told me, I've never seen a single child at any of these daycares. And so I went up and met up with him. And from there, we made history.
What's the backlash been?
You'd be surprised to see how controversial exposing fraud is. I never thought it would be controversial to help taxpayers know where their money's going. Right now, you're seeing leftists try to point, they're trying to find somebody to blame for everything. They're trying to find a reason for their anger. And so for them, my face has become the point of their anger, unfortunately. So every day you're getting death threats. People are saying you shouldn't be alive. How can you feel good about yourself? In reality, all I did was expose fraud. ICE was already there. And if anything, I helped save American taxpayers millions of dollars.
Can you help explain, feel free to expand on this, how this fraud actually worked? How do you have an empty daycare that receives a bunch of money with no kids? For normal people, they don't understand how that's even possible.
Yeah, so basically what happens is these people open up these daycares or these autism centers. For instance, in 2017, the autism part of the welfare program in Minnesota, I believe the funding was around $1 million for these autism clinics. And now by 2024, it was up to $200 million that the state was setting aside for these autism centers. So what happened is they used the Somalian population, and you can't blame the Somalis for taking advantage of this because they were used by the government to open up these daycares and then to receive the money. And nobody knows exactly where that money went once it got into the hands of the owners of these daycares. And so there wasn't anyone running any random checks at any of these daycares. That's why when I went, there's nobody there because it was unannounced. Nobody knew I was coming. And this footage speaks for itself. Absolutely nobody at any of these daycares during a weekday.
Nick, what's your defense fund?
Yeah, right now, Black Lion Guardian is helping me. So if you go to blacklionguardian.com, people can donate there. And it is essential because right now you're seeing all the people come after me. And so you see on the screen right there, supportnickshirley.com, there's a link that can help people to donate at Black Lion Guardian. And that really does help because my life's actually in jeopardy. And it sucks to say that, but it's just the truth.
Thanks, Nick. I appreciate it. You want your mind to work well. We all want that, right? We all want to be able to focus on the task at hand, and we want our minds to work well. You know that there are natural herbal supplements that can help you with that. That's what Chalk is here for. Natural herbal supplements from Chalk. People think when they hear about female vitality stacks or male vitality stacks or chocolate powder that it's just about your body. No, it's about your mind. Things like testosterone, they're about your mind. You have to have it. Chalk has changed my life. I am a believer. I take it every single day with my breakfast. I will never, ever stop. They are hardcore anti-communists, and they're going to make your life better. Chalk.com/JesseTV. Go. You are 90 days away from having a better life. We'll be back.
I understand that, but they take people to Fort Snelling here, which literally was built as a concentration camp, and Alligator Alcatraz, which I think we can all agree is a concentration camp. Not saying they're Dachau, I'm not saying they're putting people in ovens yet, but these are concentration camps.
Okay.
I don't need to argue with you.
I don't know what gets me more. The teenage girl usage of the word literally, which you know drives me up the wall. The pink hat? The pink hat? Or are they just the anxiety these people feel? It must be miserable to be a dirty commie. Joining me now, Priya Patel, conservative commentator. All right, Priya, is it the hat? Is it the word literally? Or is it the complete mental instability of these nutballs? I don't know.
You know, I think it's all of the above, to be so honest with you. You know, I find it really, really reckless of CNN to air somebody like this and bring them on air. But this is the type of propaganda that we see so many leftists completely falling for. And of course, the liberal media is just allowing them to continuously perpetuate and push that message across and brainwash the people of the United States.
Priya, what does CNN get out of that? What do they get out of feeding that type of person, not just by having them on, but by feeding that into the airwaves every single day? You have all these mentally ill people sitting at home, popping a Xanax, just getting deeper and deeper into whatever mental struggles they're going through. How does that help CNN?
You know, I think it ultimately helps get the message that they want across, and that is to demonize Republicans and to demonize the Trump administration and to demonize our federal law enforcement that are trying to enforce immigration law. At the end of the day, I think that's exactly what the Democrat leaders and the Democrat media exactly want. They want destruction, they want death, and they want chaos. And that's exactly what they get when they convince a bunch of people that ICE is a Gestapo coming to throw people in concentration camps, which is highly, highly, highly incorrect, obviously, as we all know, because we have common sense and we're somewhat intelligent at the very least. And, you know, the more that they are allowed to push this message across, the more brainwashed that they're allowing these people to become.
Priya, I understand that propaganda is effective, otherwise propaganda wouldn't be used. And so how effective has the anti-ICE propaganda been? Obviously, I've seen the stuff online and Twitter, which is X now, or Instagram or whatever, and I know it's had some effect. How much?
You know, I don't think that it's had as much of an effect as we've seen just as a display from all the riots and the chaos that we've seen come out of Minnesota. But, you know, it has been effective. I think a lot of the results of the violence that we've seen from all of these riots and how ICE has had to essentially been forced to defend themselves, because, of course, local law enforcement is not going to come to their defense and help instill order to all of the chaos that they're causing. But ultimately, immigration is a very popular issue that obviously the Trump administration won largely on in November, you know, 2 Novembers ago now. But, you know, I think that they're losing favor just because of all the chaos that this is ensuing.
I've told people for a little while now, since this Somali fraud got uncovered in Minnesota, that this is the appetizer. Wait until they get to California. Much larger state, much longer economy, almost universal Democrat rule, at least at the state government level. You are all over this. Tell me about California.
Yeah, you know, I mean, highlighting like what you were saying about the Somali fraud in Minnesota, we've seen confirmed over $700 million moved out of the Minnesota airports, out of the country, by a very largely run Somalian airport. But like you said, California is going to be such a massive case in comparison. I mean, we've seen so many cases as far as, you know, the billions of dollars that go disappearing when it comes to combating homelessness. And that's just even one example. You know, we've seen so many things. I've highlighted a lot of cases of fraud on my social medias that have come out of California, and we're only going to see more of that as a lot of these journalists head over here to discover a lot of what's going on.
Tell me about the insurance commissioner case, and does this tie in any way to Gavin Newsom?
Yeah, you know, it does tie into Gavin Newsom, because as far as I'm aware, if, you know, any of this is actually the case regarding Ricardo Lara, our insurance commissioner here in California, any taxpayer-funded expenses have to be signed off by the governor's office. But Ricardo Lara was involved in a scandal that I believe is still ongoing in investigation, and it was broken, or the story broke, by ABC7 San Francisco last year, where Ricardo Lara has taken over 100 trips since starting his position in office in 2019, and the records that were loosely uncovered of 48 of these trips show multiple international endeavors. Only of 7 of these trips have had recorded, you know, insurance and business related purposes. But some of these include luxury 5-star resorts, African safaris, and a lot of this is to be as far as I'm aware, a lot of it is confirmed to be on the taxpayer's dime. And from my understanding, it's still an ongoing investigation. But this is just ridiculous. I mean, we have a massive crisis in California, especially when it comes to the insurance. And this is what the guy in charge is focused on. I mean, he took a trip to, I believe it was Colombia, for an LGBTQ political politician conference for 5 days. And I believe that total of that trip came out to be $24,000. And then on top of that, he took a trip to New York City for Pride Fest and partied with a drag queen DJ called DJ Kitty Glitter. So I'm really confused at how any of this is business related. But if the California Democrats would like to explain to me, I'd happily listen.
Speaking of LGBTQ, who's Scott Wiener and should I allow him around my kids?
I would highly recommend you don't. but Scott Wiener is actually a state senator here in California who's actually running for the 11th district of Congress here in California, which is Nancy Pelosi's seat. But Scott Wiener has been largely responsible for a whole lot of legislation that essentially makes it far easier for people to commit sex crimes, especially against children.
Oh, well, that's lovely. What's the status of Prop 50 out there?
Pardon me?
Prop 50, what's the status of it?
Oh, Prop 50. So Prop 50 was a special election legislation, or ballot measure rather, that we had last year here in California to redistrict our congressional maps. And this passed with a majority vote in California, but however, the GOP, along with a state legislator, found that these maps were racially driven and had racial motivations behind them. So they went along and sued the governor, and the court appointees that we had were actually a Biden appointee, an Obama appointee, and a Trump appointee. So of course the Democrats outnumbered the Republicans, and we lost at the state level, but this is going up to the Supreme Court, and hopefully we're going to see a positive outcome.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. All right. We have Lighten the Mood coming up. Before we lighten the mood, you know what's coming. It's almost here. JesseKelly.com is where you got to go. JesseKelly.com. You just put in your email address. It's right on the front. And I'm going to send you something. It is not a gimmick. It's not a gag. I'm not trying to sell you anything. Something we've been working on for a while. I've been teasing it for a while. I want you to have it. I want everyone to have it. I want you to spread it around when you get it. It's totally free. JesseKelly.com. We'll be back. I've told you before, what's my favorite thing in politics? We've talked about it before. What is it? My favorite thing in politics is Democrats pandering to black people. It is the most shameless, pretty overtly racist, hilarious thing in the world. And they all do it. They all do it. They'll do it on camera. They'll do it. I don't know how you go to sleep at night having debased yourself in that way. And there are so many examples. I could go down the list. I could really go down the list. There's most recently, Gavin Newsom, you know, he's getting ready to run for president, goes on this NBA black podcast, and he talked about eating mac and cheese and eating Wonder Bread while he was shooting hoops in the back. He even used the term hustling. I was just hustling, man. Hillary Clinton, her famous hot sauce in my purse. Joe Biden might have been the best. He was either telling black people that they were going to get put back in chains, or he was opining about the razor fight he got in with a black gangster named Corn Pop. There's nothing in the world that gives me the giggles more than Democrats pandering to black people. I love it. I can't help it. One of the all-timers that doesn't get a lot of play is when Pete Buttigieg, he did this documentary special, and he drank a 40 out of a brown paper bag with a couple black dudes. I want you to know that our wonderful producers, Matt, John, and the fellas, they didn't Photoshop that. What you're looking at right there, that's real. That actually happened. Now, why? Why go that low? Even Hillary didn't actually pull out the hot sauce, I don't think, anyway. I haven't seen it in a while. Why go that low? Well, he's gay. And the black community doesn't like gay people. It's really not more complicated than that. Oh yeah, he's a Democrat, but he's gay. Our buddy Clay Travis posted some poll the other day, credit to him, and it was showing the different Democrat candidates, Gavin Newsom and Dome and AOC, and how they're polling with the different demographics out there. And there was Hispanics and whites and things like that, but that one you're looking at right there is one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. Pete Buttigieg, remember, well-known by now, ran for president last time. He was transportation secretary. So no matter what, you're at 2%. Okay, you're not going to win, but you're at 5% with the black community. Pete Buttigieg is still at 0%. They all know who he is, and nobody's interested. Gosh. Well, that's the bad news. Good news is... he's come from behind before. I'll see you tomorrow.